You have to create a meaning, some people call it why, deep-rooted reason, that's bigger than your emotions. If you're always controlled by circumstances, it's not real enough for you.
Always start sooner than you think. Do it before you're ready. I think that you could be a little scared and you could tiptoe your way into it.
I operate out of a lot of fear. If I do stop, this all comes crumbling down, which is a weird thing to motivate you. I think most people are like, oh, pace is heading towards something. He wants to become a billionaire. And I'm like, no, being a billionaire is not my goal. My goal is not being that guy. Yes.
I mean, it's not like a magic wand. It's not like you decide this and all of a sudden everything appears, but it's in making the decision, that combination of common sense, what makes sense for me, what is knowable and true, and intuition. I know I'm meant for more. It's at the intersection of those two things, I think, that we do own our future and step outside our comfort zone.
Own your future, because if you don't, someone else will.
I've moved away from the idea of certain like traditional meanings of like what failure is. Like failure is when you, no, that's not failure to me. Failure is just when you don't do it, when you stay stagnant. And so what's helped me is like really controlling my meanings and how I define things.
Wow, that's
things.
A really good way.
You know, and so I don't look at the typical things of that's a loss. I'm like, no, I played sports enough. And I know for the fact, like if you talk to the Kansas City Chiefs, they're going to tell you that it's not the championship they're celebrating. It's the loss in the season that brought them together. That was the biggest moment in their season. So I realize now, no, it's not a loss. It's just, you know, a different way of me winning, you know?
I love the thought of redefining. I never looked at it that way. But it's if you give failure a different meaning, it changes everything. If
Absolutely.
Failure is, hey, you're not good enough. See, your teachers was right. Your parents were right. Or failure is, well, I just figured out how not to do it. Or what can I learn from this? How can that be fuel to make sure next time I don't? Just same exact circumstance, just a different definition.
Absolutely. It's like a door being closed with rejection. I don't look at rejection now as like, oh, I wasn't good enough. They didn't want me. I now say thank you because that opportunity wasn't meant for me. And so when I approach that, it just helps me take control of my life and control over my self-esteem and my worth.
Yeah, I love that. Another question I thought about to ask you, and I think from our years of knowing each other, I think I know the moment, but I'm gonna let you share it. Was there a moment in your life or a moment in history when you decided to take complete ownership?
I call it the blame and complain mindset, right? BC, like we blame everything, we blame everybody. And I was in that place a lot in my life where it was everybody's fault. The moment for me, I believe, it's probably a lot of moments, but me getting cut.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
that's
me getting cut from the NFL, because at that moment I realized like, I'm not gonna give anybody control to be able to say when I, you know, if I have a job or not, or dictate how I feel about myself, my self-esteem and my worth. And that was the moment where I said, you know, I'm taking complete ownership over my life and I'm gonna make it on me. I'm gonna put it on me. Yeah. If I completely fail and fall off the face of the earth, cool. At least I know I did it daringly, it's on me. But if I can make this thing happen, which I believe that I could, and I did, it's on me. And so, yeah, I got sick and tired of living, you know, and people don't understand this about professional sports. And I'll just say this, like, just imagine, you see the superstars, right? That's the very minimal percent, but you have a majority of players that are literally living in fear every single day. So every day I would wake up, I wouldn't know if I would be in that same city the next day.
Wow.
I would go to practice and get fired coming off the field. And I said, I don't want to live life like that. And so many people watching this, it might not be sports, but so many people are in positions where they're living life just like that. It might be a boss or it might be this or that. And I know, you know, we got to have jobs and things, but if you're a person that's complaining about where you're at, if you're a person that says, man, I want to change my life and do something, then you have to be able to say it's on me. I'm not going to put on everybody else, and I'm going to give myself permission and take the permission away from them.
Resourcefulness will always outdo resources. Always. It's so when you went, I mean, think, let's just back up a little bit. I love 60 million people a week are impacted by you. Well, let's just talk about it. You're an NFL guy that was in football his whole life. You made your dream. You played at Baylor. You crushed it. You made the NFL. Your whole life dream, and then one day it's gone for good. Yeah. And then I'm sure people are like, what's he doing now? He's doing videos on Facebook? Like,
yes.
But like,
yes.
I can imagine the guys on your team say, yo, since Trent got fired,
exactly,
he's doing Facebook videos and something called rehab time. Oh, my God.
Like 1,000%.
And that moment, you could have said, I'm a football player. I don't have the resources. I don't know anybody in this space. Never done videos. I don't have a fancy camera. I don't have a big studio. Man, there's no way. This is stupid, right? But you found a way to be resourceful. So what advice would you give to somebody who's feeling like I just don't have a, I'm just not dealt a hand, man. I want to do what you guys are doing. I want to go to another level, but I'm just not dealt the right hand.
Yeah, you have to create a meaning. Some people call it why, deep-rooted reason, that's bigger than your emotions. And what I mean by that is, you know, if my emotions got in the way of what I what I'm doing now, I would have been stopped. I would have stopped when I pressed live and two people showed up. I would have stopped when I did my first events and it was literally people who felt sorry for me there. I would have stopped when people were laughing at me saying, oh, you're doing that? You're doing that little rehab time thing? I would have stopped. But it was bigger than my emotions because I had a commitment deep enough and, you know, to a friend that committed suicide and to myself and to people that I know needed this. That's what it was for me. And so I would challenge everybody watching this is, what's your deep-rooted reason, and is it deep enough than your emotions? Because if you're always controlled by circumstances, it's not real enough for you.
Yeah,
true. You know, story. It's not. And so circumstances never control me. Yes, I went through my moments where
so good.
I questioned and I wanted to give up. But it's gotten to a point now where, you know, when circumstances happen, it's just circumstances. Because I know if I continue to weather the storm shall pass at some point.
Yeah.
And I'll continue to grow.
I love that. I love that. So here, you kind of alluded a little bit to it before, but I want to see if there's something, you know, in today's world, the trending term is imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It just, you're scared.
Like, right, for sure.
Self-doubt, I'm afraid, what if I fail? Like, we can call it whatever we want. It's been there since the beginning of time. What's something that most people wouldn't know about you when they see what you're doing, the impact you have, the family man you are, coaching on a field, supporting Tristan and his evolution and all your family. As you were growing your business, and I know you said some of it, but is there something you haven't shared that you worried about when no one was watching? And I'm not that good at this, or I'm not that good of a speaker, or I don't know how to run business, or it can't work for me because of where I've come from.
Yeah.
What is it?
Oh, so much of what you just said. And that still comes up sometimes.
Me too.
It still comes up. Am I good enough? Am I even now, like, do people still want to watch me? Like, am I still going to grow? But starting off, it was, well, most things people don't know. I've talked about it, but I deal with a little bit of social anxiety. So I'm like, how can I be in this space where I'm in front of people, talking to people when I have this, not a disability, but I have this thing that I'm dealing with. That literally when I'm around a whole group of people, I feel very uncomfortable. So how can I do this? Also with imposter syndrome, you know, I want to break this down a little bit because we think of imposter syndrome sometimes and it's different, but you know, or am I good enough? But there was a time in my journey and still now where I feel as if, you know, I'll get around environments and I'm like, man, like these people work harder than me. And how am I in this position? Am I not supposed to be here? Is it luck? Is it this? Is it that? Yeah. How am I here? And I realized this, man. And I don't know if this is I don't know if it's just one of my wild takes, but I sat back one day and I said, kind of you talked about that was natural with you, with your marketing. I'm sure, I don't know, because you work hard, but I'm sure it's people out there that probably like kill themselves to understand what you understand, but it's just a gift to you.
Yeah.
And I realized this with myself is that maybe it seems so effortlessly and easy because this is your gift.
Wow.
This is your gift.
Yeah.
You know, and so now I've looked at it differently. Not that I don't work hard or whatever like that, but I don't have imposter syndrome no more because I'm actually walking in my gift. So yes, it's going to seem so natural and so fluent and so easy, and it's not going to be forced because it's what I'm called to do. And so that's really helped me deal with imposter syndrome a lot because it still comes up. I'm like, this person's like studying all these things, reading all these books, and I'm not doing that. And I'm like, man, am I supposed to be where I'm at? Then I said, man, this is actually you are because
this is your journey. Gift. Your gift and your journey.
And my journey, exactly.
Influence.
Yeah.
Sales, persuasion, whatever you want to call it. And I know our relationship and I know how you feel about sales when you first started. And now I know how it's evolved to service. When you write a book, if somebody buys your book, you're serving them. They get to change their life because your books, they're amazing.
Right.
If you build a course, you're serving them by getting them to raise their hand and say yes, right? I was there when you filmed one of your first courses. Right. I watched you do it. I'm like, the world needs more Trent. Let's get you creating something. And people have different perceptions of selling. Some people like, I love it. I get to serve. It's like one of my things. I love selling when I'm selling something I love. I love promoting you. Today, I'm going to push everybody to go to your social and follow you. I'm going to sell you on this guy because this guy will take your life from where you are to where you want to be in so many levels, especially if you're watching him and you vibe. So I have no... It's like selling a good movie to a friend or a good book or a good meal to a friend. It's like, I'm doing you a disservice if I don't introduce you to Trent if you don't already know him, which you probably do. So there's that feeling. But then there's, I know the feeling when you first start, it's like, I just want to help people. Is it wrong to offer, yeah. right? But your business is growing and you get paid a lot of money to be on stages. You're in high demand. You only do 15 or so a year. You could probably do 50 a year. And what you get for an hour is amazing and it's all deserved. You have courses, you have books. What's one way, if you could think, it doesn't have to be perfect, what's one way you've sold, persuaded, influenced, your business wouldn't grow, you know, sales are the oxygen of every company. No matter what anybody says, it's like, no, it's just gonna go viral. No, it's not, right? It doesn't matter how many videos you have go viral. If you don't ask them to come to an event, if you don't ask them to buy your book,
they're not coming,
right? So what's a way that you've been able to impact through service, through sales, through influence, where it's worked with you, where it's aligned with you?
Yeah. Well, it's fully, this is a deep question.
But I know it is.
It's being fully, number one, is immersed in my community, immersed in my audience. And what I mean by that is being able to give them so much value, so much value. And I always hear you in the back of my head, like, you're doing a disservice if you don't give them the next thing. If you don't give them the next thing, they're going to find the next thing from someone else. Do you want someone else? Do you trust someone else?
They might not love your students as much or your followers as much as you do.
Exactly. And so that's really helped me be able to find the confidence in all these negative beliefs and limiting beliefs of selling. And I realized, too, that so many of my supporters, they've asked for more. And once I started to give them more, and I realized, like, wait a minute, like, this is really impacting their life, because inspiration, and being inspired is one thing. But when you have somebody be immersed in a product in which you do, that's when they become transformed and impacted.
Yeah.
And so I was able to see that just for the little bit, even when I started with you. So I said, man, I want to create more of these things. And it's really, man, I think the selling part is really me believing in what I'm selling so much that it becomes contagious to them. And they say, man, I have to have this. You brought it up in there. When I first started selling whatever, like a program, I was kind of like,
if you want. But you don't really have to.
And I'm like, I wouldn't buy that. Like, I should be proud of this. Like, I put in the work in this. Like, my retreats, like, I know the transformation that happens. And so just by having that energy and telling them, giving this opportunity, this space for them to be able to transform and change their life, it's allowed me to bring more confidence, because you need this. And if you don't get it, I feel sorry for you. Not in the way of, like, if you can't afford it, but you need to be in this, because I understand what it's going to do for your life if you step into this transformation.
You buy businesses. How the hell did that happen? It started really corporate. So unlike a lot of entrepreneurs or people that I think come and speak on podcasts, I was a fraidy cat for years. So I worked in corporate America for a long time in finance. And what we do in finance and private equity is we buy businesses, but really big ones, right? So $100 billion transaction, we use other people's money, aka the bank, to do it typically.
Yep.
And then we make millions, billions of dollars. And at some point I was kind of miserable. I don't know if anybody could relate, but 60, 70 hour weeks. And I didn't see an end to it. I looked at the managing directors that were higher than me and thought, I don't want
I'm going to be them. If I do really well,
that's the goal. That's
where I go.
And I was like, I don't want it. I don't want any of that. They don't seem happy. And so I started to figure out, where could my golden parachute be? Like, how could I get out of this? And what I realized is, wait, there's nothing that difference between a giant transaction and a little transaction. Why couldn't I buy a tiny business and use other people's money in order to do it? And I could maybe buy enough of those where I could just cover my salary. Like, that's it.
What would you say to that person who is a little scared, thinking, I shouldn't do this because I'm safe? And are you really safe? It was an illusion.
Always start sooner than you think. Do it before you're ready. You'll never feel ready. Sort of like, that conversation people have with kids, like, you're never ready. I feel like people should say that same thing to people who want to become an entrepreneur. The difference maybe is...
Oh, yeah, like the people who want to have kids. Like, you're never going to be ready.
You're never ready. Just have the kid. You're like, you're never ready. Just do the thing.
Yeah. Great point.
But I actually think I'm a little different. Like, we were talking about mutual friends we have. I have a couple of mutual friends that are like, I slept on a couch. I lived on the floor. And I do not think you have to do that.
No, absolutely not.
I think that you could be a little scared and you could tiptoe your way into it. And so if I was talking to my 19-year-old self, I'd say, start tiptoeing sooner. You don't have to take a big jump. Tiptoe. Yeah.
Investigate. Right?
Exactly.
And don't be so afraid of the unknown.
Yeah, learn.
It's actually scarier to be stuck in something you don't like and be at the end of your life and go, damn it, I missed it.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, let's tiptoe. All right. So back to your story. You're helping doing these big transactions. You realize they're doing it with big money. Can I do it with small money? If I buy a couple of these small companies with somebody else's money, can I cover my salary? Where'd you go from there?
So from there, I did what most people do. I waffled around, cried, you know, didn't make changes for a bit. And then finally, I started thinking about businesses that I could do from afar. At the time, I was running around traveling like every week, nonstop, two flights a week at least. And so I couldn't buy a business and run it myself. I was working way too much. But I found a guy who was operating a laundromat. And at the time, this guy who was operating a laundromat, when he was explaining it to me, we knew each other through mutual friends. I was like, wait a second. Like, you just need a little bit of cash to operate a laundromat. What if you run a laundromat and I buy one and we could buy one from really cheap? Here's how I think we could structure it. Because he was like, laundromats cost $1 million. And I was like, I don't think so, because I know how to find these businesses that are kind of going a little sideways, or maybe businesses that are really small but never want to be big businesses. And I thought, let's apply the same idea we do in private equity, which is we find kind of the little guys that need some help, and we either give them capital or we give them operational capacity.
Right.
100%. And so we did that together. We did my first little laundromat transaction. So that was like $100,000 that I invested for $67,000 a year in profit. Now, to be clear, $100,000 is a lot. And now I teach people how to do deals with a lot less cash. But back then, $100,000 was a lot for me, but wouldn't bankrupt me, right?
Got it. Yep.
And I did that first transaction. And I was like, oh, this works. I don't have to step foot in it. I'm in Chile half the time doing deals. And this tiny business works. And then we bought another one. And then we bought another one. And then I realized everything rhymes. And we are building our own little private equity holding company. But the fascinating part about it was I was quiet. Like, I didn't tell anybody. I've only been on the internet for like 2 years. And prior to this, like, I was almost embarrassed. Like, I own these little dirty businesses, these boring businesses. Yeah. And maybe the people listening, maybe you have that thing that you think you shouldn't do, or that is dirty, or that is boring, or that somebody's make fun of you. And it turns out the second I started talking about it on the internet, now we have 4 million followers and 100 million monthly views, and all talking about laundromats, you know, ridiculous, right? Yeah. So that was the first deal that was the catalyst for all the other deals.
You know, when people hear things in personal development, change your beliefs, change your life, change your story, change your life. You're like, I don't need any of that stuff. Just give me a good business. But when you really, as you get older, especially, and you're doing so amazing, again, I mean this, it's incredible what you've done. You're going to see that those little things are actually the big things.
That's so true.
What you felt about laundromats, no one will care. Was that reality or your belief?
Belief.
Right. And once the belief was shifted, you thought, what other companies,
100%.
What other businesses, this seem a little dirty or you don't want to talk about, but could do the same thing for me. And really, when people say, what's the secret to success? There's a million things, but the little things are the big things. And wisdom comes from questioning your beliefs and stepping into the uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, you said something when we were chatting that I loved, which was that, you know, when we share our experiences online, we turn decades into days, which, little light bulb. You're like, I'm going to solve your issue about thinking about sharing information in 30 seconds. And I was like, sure, let's see, you know, and then that line, and I was like, God, that's exactly it. And that what's so funny is in finance, we are taught tactics, you know, give me the financials, give me the spreadsheet all day. Yeah. And what I realized actually not so long ago, you would be proud, I think, because I could see like you and Tony, you found this stuff out like 30 years ago. I found it out 30 minutes ago, but, no. But I gave this speech, and I was listening to the person before me give theirs, thankfully. And they were talking about how people physically represent money. So their body, if they could have a physical representation of money, what would that look like with your body? And it was a small group of women, very successful women, by the way, 6, 7, 8-figure women. And they were like, I want you to think about money, close your eyes, and then make your body a physical representation of money. And so I'm like, okay, I'm in the back. And so I think money, and I go, money, like hands up, right? I'm like, I don't even think about it. I don't say the words out loud. I'm just in the back like, yeah, I like it, you know, whatever. And then she says, open your eyes, and we look around. And everybody else is sort of like curled up, like closed, tight, or just like money or money. And it was the weirdest thing I've ever saw, because then I went on and said, okay, I'm going to give you a bunch of tactics and tools, because that's kind of the way that my brain works. But if you
if your physical body is like this, and this is how you think about money, like I could give you lists. I could give you the spreadsheet. I could tell you every single thing to do. But I kind of feel like you need to go and listen to somebody like Dean or somebody like Tony first, because if you don't believe it, then all the numbers won't back it.
If you don't believe love, we ever find love.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds so touchy-feely, which like hurts my little finance soul, except it's true. And so I think it's really powerful, the stuff that you do, when you open people's aperture larger, and then they can see the numbers and they can see the tactics. But before it, they'll just be on the internet saying, well, fucking work, no way, no how, whatever.
So then buying laundromats evolved to, this is your business. Yeah. I mean, you have a company now, 26 companies, or is it more? Is that what it's at right now?
Yeah, 26 boring businesses, I call them. And then we have essentially our media company. So now we have three of those. And then we have five what I call media accelerated companies. So what I realized is there's just levels to every game, right? So I had that first little laundromat. And then I was like, huh, well, I could just have more laundromats because it's the same thing. And then what about car washes? And then how about, oh, this is a landscaping company with the same dynamic. So I started building up this thing. And then a weird thing happened to me in private equity, which happens to a lot of employees, which is I made more money in my side stuff than my main stuff. And at that point in my career, I mean, I'm like 8 years into finance. I'm pretty senior. I'm making, you know, $1 million a year as an employee. I'm doing pretty well. And, but I was making more in this other thing. At this point, I actually really liked what I did in private equity. I could have been an employee for a long time, actually, except some of the other people that I worked with got wind of how much I was making in this other stuff. And I started becoming a little bit public. I wasn't making any money. I wasn't selling anything online. I just, people found out about portfolios. My leadership business grew. And so I got a couple of, you know, CNBC spots and whatever. And I remember one of my partners at the time said, you know, we don't build ourselves. We build the company. We don't talk about you. Yeah. We talk about we. And at the time I was pissed. I was like, I have made you hundreds of millions of dollars. Now I kind of get it as a boss. He's right. I was playing with his chips and he did me a huge service, which is he said, you got to pick, which one do you want to do? And to this day, we're great friends. He's an incredible CEO. Like you would love him. The culture he's built in finance is incredible. But I left. We took a walk on the beach. He said, you pick. I was kind of like, I think you're ridiculous. Like, you know, we kind of fought. And I left. And then I said, hey, we're going to go our separate ways. But actually, I respect you. I kind of get it.
Of course.
But if he didn't fire me, but if he hadn't put that ultimatum on the line, I wouldn't have then.
You had to make a choice.
Yeah, I wouldn't have then gone. And I even then, Dean, I did the wussy thing again. I went and partnered with somebody else in a private equity firm. I went into theirs. I didn't think I could do it by myself. Yeah. I thought I needed somebody.
That career mindset evolving to, I can do this on my own.
Yeah, I needed a bridge. And then I realized quickly, oh man, I'm bringing in all the money to these guys. I'm bringing in all the deals. Why am I doing this with somebody else? And then I had to have the, you know how the universe repeats lessons? It's like, do you get it? Do you get it yet?
How many times do you want this one?
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, I'd like another face punch, please. And so then the same thing happened. I started getting big. I was in private equity and cannabis, and I had been in private equity cannabis for like 6 months, and I'm like headlining the private equity cannabis conference. We're getting all the deals. We're doing whatever. Same thing with one of my partners. They're like, this is too much outside of the partnership. We don't want to be public. You obviously want to be public. So pick. And I was like, God, again?
Pick again. Yeah.
And I had, you know, I had a lot of millions of dollars invested in there. And so then I basically said, again, I think you guys are wrong. Fine. And then I left that private equity fund. I finished that last fund with us and did the fundraise and was like, I suppose I am now unemployable and I shall work for myself. Yeah. And, but it took
nudges. And how many times do we all get the nudge and we ignore it? People from the outside say, he's past the worry. He's past the insecurities. He's past questioning himself if he's good enough to be in this room.
Yeah.
What's something that still pops up on the inside for you that no one would think?
I operate out of a lot of fear, similar to what you just said, which is if I don't stop, if I do stop, this all comes crumbling down, which is the weirdest thing. It just is an old mindset that I have to get rid of. And of course, you and I have been friends for a year, but I still get nervous being around you. I got nervous coming into the podcast. I think a lot of people assume that you've reached a point where you don't worry about those things. I worry about them as much as I used to worry about them, the problems are way bigger today than they were 5 years ago, 10 yeah. years ago. They're bigger. I'm just more equipped, or I have a better team, I should say, to help me equip, you know, equip yeah. myself with solutions to them. So for the people out there like, oh yeah, he's reached that pinnacle. I worry about losing it all too.
Yeah.
Just like you did. You said this on a podcast too. You said, I feel like if I stop, I'll lose it all and I'll yeah. become my father.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to motivate you. I think most people are like, oh, Pace is heading towards something. He wants to become a billionaire. And I'm like, no, being a billionaire is not my goal. My goal is not being that guy.
Yeah, same here. Right. And no, it's so great that you say that, because I don't focus on it every moment of my life. I bring it up now so other people can see that this is being human. This is part of the journey. I focus more on where I want to go, but I'm not afraid to go to that side of what I want to run away from right. and what I'm fearful of. And so let me ask you, so you still have the fear of losing it all. I don't think you're ever going to outgrow that, no matter how old you are, but it will soften, and it's a good reminder. It evolves to being I know what that felt like, and I don't want to go back there. And because of the business you're in of helping others, it reminds you that you could have been that hair cutter. You could have been yeah. the guy still doing houses for somebody else. I still could have been, right now, I could fixing have been cars. The best collision shop owner in upstate New York. I might have had three of them by now.
Man, your customers would be so motivated.
Yeah, I might have had three collision shops by right. now, right? And I'm not knocking a collision shop. I'm just saying I knew I was meant for more. And I couldn't stop. I just knew I had to go there. So I appreciate you sharing that. And you know, one thing on the other side, what's one thing about success that, you know why I asked you this? Because you're not, and neither am I, right? You're not the Lambo guy, no. and the, right? That's not you.
You and I both drive a truck.
I know. I saw you come in. Your Ford's actually a little fancier than mine.
Yours
a little fancier.
Yours
than
was fancier than mine, but mine just hit 8 years and I was like, it's time.
I love the truck. I saw it when you pulled in. But what's one thing about success or a byproduct of the success you have that you didn't see coming?
Realizing that it was never going to be about me. It was always going to be about the other people's lives that I changed, which is interesting because I was so afraid to hire my first employee. I was so afraid. Do you remember when you hired your first
mm-hmm.
employee?
Mm-hmm.
I had to have somebody force me. John, shout out to John Bohm. I hired a mindset coach. He was $500 an hour to sit down with me at Starbucks. And he sits down with me 30 minutes, changes my life, helps me out. Second time I go to meet him, it's in a Starbucks, paying this guy $500. He stands up before I can get over the table and he says, "You're fired." I go, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm paying you $500 to hang out with you in a Starbucks. What are you talking about? You're firing me." And he said, I go, hold on. Why is he firing me? So I said, "John, why are you firing me?" He goes, "Because I can tell by the way you walked in here, the lack of self-respect you have because you didn't follow through with what you promised me last month." He could tell with my wow. body language. He's now the head mindset coach of the Arizona Cardinals. So
wow.
I was lucky enough to have this guy in my life. He says, "I'm sick of your bullshit. Pull out your phone right now. We're going to hire somebody right now." And he makes me put an ad out.
Wow. Good. Smart enough for you to get a coach to push you like that though.
Dean, I wasn't smart enough. Somebody else told me, if you don't get a coach, this is going to happen to you. Again, it was the nitrous. Yeah. It was the negative things that drove me. And so John makes me hire somebody. I hire a girl named Anna Martinez the next day. She triples my business within 30 days. And what it was really simple things. Like somebody was picking up the phone when they should have picked up the phone. I was a contractor. My phone was in my pocket. I was installing a toilet. I was doing all the stupid things myself. I didn't value my time.
Yeah.
Anna came into my world and changed my entire life. Here's the answer to your question. The part that I wasn't expecting is that entire 8-year journey with Anna, she's no longer with me. The payoff was when she realized Pace showed me a world that I didn't know existed. She went out and started her own business.
Wow.
The company bought her a house, and just watching the fruits of all of our team's labor to create that. Now she's out on her own, building her own thing. I'm like, that was my life's purpose. It wasn't me making more money or doing whatever. It's putting other people on and showing them that they have something in them that they didn't see before they met me.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable when you understand the shift. And you've heard it a million times, so I'm just a reminder service today that the fastest way to wealth and happiness is helping other people gain wealth and happiness.
It sounds,
or abundance, or joy. It sounds too
cliche.
It sounds fake. Yeah. It sounds fake.
So I got to ask you. So you went from contractor.
Yeah.
To houses, mm-hmm. doing your own, right?
Yeah.
The tap on the shoulder, the grab, the claw on the shoulder, right? What made you think of transitioning into helping others, right? It's the journey. It's the same journey I was on, right? It's like you don't know what to do. You're insecure. Then you take the uncomfortable action. And you're like, holy crap, I'm not that smart. I'm not the smartest guy in the room. At least this is the way I felt. I'm not saying with you. I'm not the smartest guy in the room. Not the richest guy in the room. But I was able to do this.
Yeah.
Crap. I bet you I can help other people do it. Was there an epiphany? Was there a moment? Was it a slow transition? You got the hottest show on A&E. Like, how did that all come together?
Everything, even the show, I'll tell you how we got the show in a second. That will answer the question. But Bethany Willis, she saw me working hard. I had a lot of employees by this time. I hire Anna. I get up to the point where I now have 250 employees in my construction company. Man, my engine has always been an 8-cylinder turbocharged engine. The problem is my engine was in the wrong vehicle.
I love that.
And it wasn't until Bethany told me.
Wow, that's good.
Bethany says to me, she says, your engine is one of the most powerful engines I've ever seen. And you're wasting your time. We need to get your engine in a different vehicle. And from an auto body guy, you understand this. It's like you see people dropping engines in old cars and making them way better than they ever were. And so she transitioned me into real estate. Dean, this is the funniest thing. You think that I would have an epiphany and go, real estate's the thing. What I did is I was still addicted to working for other people.
Yeah.
And people go, man, what was it? And I go, I didn't believe in myself. I still didn't believe in myself.
I was going to say that before you said, because you don't. And then you get stuck in that kind of, well, this, I have no risk. And they're cutting me the check. That is all on me. What if I fail? What if I do it
wrong? I thought I had no risk. When you introduced me and you said you have 7,000 renovations, Dean, that's only a reminder to me that I did 7,000 renovations for other people because I believed in their choices over believing in my own.
Really good observation.
So when you introduce me with 7,000 renovations, I almost want to cower a little bit. Go, that's a reminder for 10 years I didn't believe in myself.
Yeah.
I believed in somebody else's decisions that I had no control over, didn't own my future.
Yeah.
Bethany Willis comes in like a mother, grabs me by the shoulder, shows me another option. And for two more years,
you were dabbling.
I was doing real estate. Here's the thing. In my first year in real estate, I made like $500,000. And I poured that money into my construction company to invest in other people's businesses. Wow. That's how little I believed in myself. And it wasn't until the guy, John files bankruptcy that I said, hold on.
You're not in control.
I'm not in control.
Yeah, it was an illusion.
It wasn't all an illusion. And it was the greatest thing that happened for me. You said this the other day at my mastermind. You said, guys, it's not this stuff didn't happen to you. It happened for you. And your story behind that changed the whole room. Like I told you, 2 hours after you left, my entire community was talking about how you impacted them in 45 minutes. And that was probably one of the biggest things was life is happening for you, not to you. So here's what it was. I get filed bankruptcy on. I go, I have no control. Yeah. I need full control of my future. So I was already doing the real estate stuff. Why the hell was I?
Right. You had an illusion.
An illusion. And I didn't believe in myself. And so I took, here's what it was, Dean. By that time, those 2 years, while I was doing both construction and I was doing real estate, I accumulated 3 or 4 really good friends. So when I got that bankruptcy letter, all I did was double down on those relationships. And those guys were now my new Bethany Willis. They then took me through the next step. And so for me, where I got into the point where I thought I could help people is one day, I don't know how much time we have, but this is a really good story. I'm now full-time real estate and I get an opportunity to buy a house here in Phoenix, Arizona from an owner that lives in Denver, Colorado. His wife is falling sick. It's their second home. He wants to get rid of it. Him and I, through good rapport, remember, real estate is never about the house. It's always about the relationship with the seller. You know this better than anybody else. So I get good rapport with him. He says, all right, here's the price, $200,000. I'll sell the house to you for $200,000. But I need you to come and meet me in person so we can sign the deal and I can shake your hand and look you in the eyes. I go, oh yeah, no problem. I'll send a mobile notary to you. He goes, I didn't say send a mobile notary to me.
He said, I want to see you.
I want to see you.
Wow.
I go, okay, wow, all right. So here's what happens. I go on to a website thinking, how do I avoid going from Arizona to Colorado? I go on a website looking for somebody to help me in Colorado. It's a forum. It's a really big company. They're like the Goliath in the industry. And I go into their forum. It's not a community. It's a forum. Very big difference. And I go into this forum and I go, hey, I need help on this real estate transaction up at, I need to meet the guy, tell the story. And I get ridiculed. You should do this and you should do that. And why are you blah, 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 blah. Okay, so I'm thinking I don't have any help. The owner of the property calls me Thursday morning. He goes, hey, I'm giving you till Friday, 5 p.m. to come meet me at this house. If you're going to come up here, great. If not, great. And I go, don't worry, don't worry. I'll be there or my partner will be there. An hour later, I get a call from somebody off the forum. He goes, hey, just got your number, saw your post. I can go meet the seller for you and I'll tell him I'm your partner. So this is what he does, Dean. He prints out my post on the forum where I say, I need somebody to help me and pose as my partner, be my JV partner on the deal. He prints it out and goes to the homeowner's house and says, Pace is asking for people to help him. He's not actually serious about buying your house. Let me buy the house from you.
Oh my God.
Right. Here's what's cool about that guy. His name's Steve. Steve, the owner, calls me up and he says, I just want to let you know that I'm a man of my word. I promised you that if you could meet me by Friday at 5 p.m., I'd sell my house to you. But I want to let you know, this guy off this website that found, he's not your friend. Oh, that rung so true for so long. And here's what happened. So I go, all right, I'll go get a flight. By this time, there's no flights. And by the time I would fly there and drive up, he's 2.5 hours away from Denver. So I'd have to get a car, rent a car, blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't get there on time. So what I did is I got in my Prius and I left at 3 o'clock in the morning and I drove all the way up to his house. I got there like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Denver time, signed the deal. I get the contract done. And all right, now I got a 16-hour road trip on my way home. Here's where the payoff was for me. That whole entire 16 hours home, all I could think about was, where is the community of Bethany Willis's helping other people get into this business? Where's the group of people I can rely on? If I get a lead or an opportunity in Florida, who can I ring on? Who can I text? Who can I reach out to that I can truly rely on? And so I said, if it doesn't exist, I need to build it. I need to be the Bethany Willis to other people. And that was the moment. The moment I got screwed over, somebody stabbed me in the back, went and printed out my freaking forum post and showed it to this guy was the moment I go, I need to be Bethany Willis. I need to be a bigger Bethany Willis. And so for 16 hours on my drive home, I voice memoed myself hundreds of ideas of how can I build a community of people that no matter where I am in the country, I can get a deal done in 5 minutes. A phone call, a text message, somebody can go on appointments for me, do all that stuff. And that's,
isn't that where the greatest things come from, is to solve your own problem
and
then amplify it.
Yeah. And I had an example. Bethany Willis was my example. So here's what I did when I got home. I go home and I go, all right, I'm going to go on Instagram stories. And I go, I'm going to take people on appointments with me. Meet me at Circle K, 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'll take you around for 12 hours. I'll go to projects with you. I'll show you how to raise money. I'll show you, you know, how I source this and all that kind of stuff. How many people showed up the first time? Zero. Yeah. Zero people show up. So through the week, nobody shows up, but I'm posting about it. I'm like, man, the people that were with me, they got so much value. And next week, how many people showed up? Three. Three people show up, 6 o'clock, Saturday morning at Circle K, right down here off Priest.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I've got people that I can put on my stories and show, hey, look, Debbie is with me and she went on an appointment. The following week, I do it again. 63 people show up to Circle K at 6 o'clock in the morning. Circle K calls the police on me. What the hell are you doing? What is there a fight going on here? I go, no, I'm just taking people on real estate meetings. And they're like, go do it somewhere else. So we went across the street to a parking lot and somebody brought a whiteboard in and I started whiteboarding. Here's what I'm doing and here's how I'm doing it. And, da, 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 da. And we started just loving on people and doing the Bethany Willis move, grabbing them by the shoulder and said, I'm going to show you how this business works. And I got addicted to that because then you get people the next week come back and go, I got my first deal. I did my first thing. I hired my first employee. I got my first office. And you're like, I have somebody in my community that met their wife at one of these parking lot meetups. They now have a child.
Wow.
And it's just, you see that and you go, this is why I was put on this earth.
I was getting a divorce from my first husband who his family business had fallen apart and he had started drinking. I mean, his whole life imploded. He had started drinking. And Thank God I had started this business. This idea of starting this little business out of a bedroom in my home allowed us to pay the bills while he was figuring it out. And in many ways, I thought, you know, I'm going to be as successful as I can be just until he gets back on his feet. And then I realized he's not getting back on his feet. And it ultimately led to us hard conversation, getting a divorce. And I remember going to my family and saying, I'm going to move to New York City. Now, at this time, I'd grown up in Virginia Beach. I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'd never lived in a big city. I'd only been to New York City twice on a quick little trip. And I say to my mom, who had always been super positive and super supportive of anything I wanted to do, like a lot of my credit, a lot of my success is because of my mother. So I go to this person. I bet a lot of you can relate to this. You go to someone that you trust with this big vision you have. And she's like, Barry, you can't move to New York City. Like, you don't know anybody there. And it's the most expensive city in the country. And you're just starting out, you're starting your life over again. And you're starting this new business and it's still fairly young. And why don't you live in the basement? Your dad and I could fix up the basement. You have your own entrance and you can get your life back together while you're figuring it out. And I remember this moment, and it's hard to, you know, if you've ever had to say something to a parent that you really like admire their wisdom, to go against that is hard. But I remember thinking just instantly, like, if I go in that basement, I'm never coming out. Like, literally or figuratively, I'm going to die there. Like, you don't go 38 years old and into your parents' basement with the divorce and come out, you know? And so I was like, no, I'm moving to New York City. I know it's crazy. And this is a part about common sense. There's common sense. And there's also intuition. And my intuition was, I know I'm meant for more. I know I'm meant to live in a bigger place and do bigger things. And I can't do it in the same environment. I've got to break through this environment to be the bigger version of myself. And when I did that, I knew my mom thought I was crazy. My sister thought I was crazy. My friends thought I was crazy because I was leaving everything that was safe and comfortable and going to a place where literally I knew no one. And starting over again. But moving to New York City and getting this little apartment on Broadway, it's like a hat trick just to get that apartment. But thank God, my landlord, Rolf Staub, I'll be forever grateful to. Someone, when you're using common sense and intuition, sometimes when you're doubling down on yourself, there'll be someone out there who believes in you just enough to give you a chance. And that was my landlord, Rolf Staub. He said yes to me, even though on paper, it was a crazy choice.
Yeah.
But he saw something in me and said yes. And in that apartment in New York City, I doubled the size of my business that year. And then the next year I doubled it again. And I worked tirelessly. Like, to your point, Dean, it's not like a magic wand. It's not like you decide this and all of a sudden everything appears, but it's in making the decision, that combination of common sense, what makes sense for me, what is knowable and true, and intuition. I know I'm meant for more. It's at the intersection of those two things, I think, that we do own our future and step outside our comfort zone. And if you're thinking about doing something like this, you know, I heard someone say this recently. Getting out of your comfort zone doesn't have to mean going out on a ledge. Like, New York City was a ledge for me. I went way out of my comfort zone to do that. But if you're just getting started on something like this, whether you're thinking of starting your own business, or you've started your own business, or you're growing your own business, out of your comfort zone could be one step out of your comfort zone. It doesn't have to be a mile outside your comfort zone. But I do think it's those baby steps that define us and take us where we're supposed to be. And for me, that was one of the most pivotal moments in my life, is just saying yes to what I knew to be true, even if it made no sense to anybody else.
No, I love unpacking that. I have so many thoughts, because you physically moved, right? So you had to move your thinking. True. You had to question these beliefs. You had to question certainty, and you physically moved. But I was thinking, even if you didn't physically move, the only way that would have changed is if you moved the other things. If you moved your threshold.
The mental move had to come first. Like, you had to make the mental leap before you could make the physical one. And part of that is believing that there's a different future for you, believing that it could be different, believing that you are meant for more. And I have to tell you, one of the most important things in doing this is to surround yourself with people who think that way. And what really helped me is the business I had started, I ended up serving the personal development space. So this little fledgling meeting planning business I had out of some, you know, this is a little bit God, a little bit faith, a little bit luck, but I ended up serving the market that you and I are in. I stumbled into it accidentally. And so every time I ran an event, I was getting a dose of personal development, and I was surrounded by people on the stage and off of it who believed, not only believed that they were meant for more, but were taking the steps to claim it. And being surrounded and immersed in that gave me permission, I think, to say yes to myself. I don't know if it would have happened if I hadn't had the certainty that comes from seeing other people live their best life and thinking, well, if you can do it, I can do it too. And now you and I are both in the business of helping people do that. It's like one of the best things in my life is not only did I pull myself out of a future I didn't want and create the future I did want, I get to do that for a living for other people now.
What are some of the things that no one would know that you still worry about when no one's watching, that are still lingering from that girl who packed up and went to New York?
Well, so I think a lot of us can probably relate to imposter syndrome. I think that shows up in a lot of layers, especially when you're swinging for the fences and you're going outside your comfort zone. And we have a saying, new level, new devil. Every time you up level, there's like a new little devil kind of waiting for you, some little problem that you have to solve. But I find for me, a lot of it comes back to like, you know, I know I'm meant for more. I know I'm really good at what I'm doing. But every time you up level, you think, am I good enough for this next level? Like, is this where I'll be found out? Is this where the road ends?
Yeah, they'll find out I'm not that smart. I always, that was mine for two decades.
Yeah, and it really, it is like that little voice in the back of your mind. And I think part of our journey, especially if you're going to grow your own business, is building this muscle to know that you're capable of that next level. And so you have to keep pushing for it. And when you do, you build that next muscle that allows you to be even more capable to go even further. And for me, I was bullied in high school. Like I had a terrible, terrible high school experience. I could not wait for high school to be over. It was a very unkind 3 years. And I am so glad that social media wasn't around when I was in high school. Like I'm forever grateful to deal with that too. But I think these circumstances in the back of our mind in our former lives come back up, right? So for me, a big thing I had to overcome was visibility. You know, to put yourself out there, especially today on social media, and to know that someone might say something unkind is to immediately take you back to high school. Yeah. Immediately bring up imposter syndrome, right?
Yep.
And so if there's something like that for you, for any of your listeners who are out there thinking, I'm afraid to be seen, or I'm afraid to be visible, or I'm afraid someone will say something ugly, or I'm afraid I won't be good enough, or I'm afraid, whatever the thing might be, at some level of probably imposter syndrome hiding, lurking in the background, it's, you know, the only way to slay that dragon is to get out there and do it. And it's easier if you go, you know what, I bet someone's going to say something ugly about me. And if they do, they're not my right fit client. You would call it your dot, but you know, they're not the person I'm meant to serve. And once I started attaching myself to that, gave me so much freedom. When I really started to look at what a hater might say, or someone bullying me on social media might say, one, it was a fraction compared to all the positive change I was creating, but it's really easy to focus on the one negative thing instead of all the positive things. So focus on the positive. And then I'd look at that person and think, are you really the person I'm meant to serve? Are you really the person I was hoping to work with, to support? And 9 times out of 10, I'm like, I hope you won't take this the wrong way, but I wouldn't even want to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you. If I met you, I would literally think you're not my person and I would walk the other way.
As Trent Shelton calls them, delusioned fans, because they're still following you. They're like, he's like, when I would see people post on like 6 of my videos in a row, oh, you're not real, you're just an ex-NFL football player. He's like, I would just write back and say, it's the 6th video you commented on. You're a delusioned fan. Come on, let's just get real. And if I can help you, I'm here. I'm like, that is a good perspective. Anyway, I just had to share that. I love that.
No, it is. I'm going to remember that. And so don't let that hold sway over you. You know, do not let what one person's negative comment, something they said to you in junior high or high school or college, control you forever. Don't let something someone says on social media keep you from doing your big dream. And don't let the nagging fear that you might not be good enough keep you from believing you are. Because I think, I really believe we're all capable of more. Like we're all born with the ability to be more. But you do have to take that first step to do it. And in addition to imposter syndrome, I think most of us are introverts. I think we read as extroverts, but most people in this industry that you would think are the most extroverted people on the planet, truth be told, we're the most introverted people on the planet. But we believe enough in our mission to get out there and be visible and do it anyway.